Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Tiger Bales and Amy McQuire with Let's Talk.
Welcome. I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations peoples right across the country. I'd also acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. Welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, good morning, Amy. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm very well, very well. Very well today. If I was feeling any better, I'd be dangerous, Amy. But a little bit overcast today, I think it was. Might be more rain coming.
Yeah, it's been raining too much. I'm ready for it to stop now.
What mic are you on? Yeah, radio.
Oh, left. Sorry,
I missed out. Now, good morning, Amy McQuire, my co-host. How are you?
That's the second time in a week you haven't turned my microphone
yes,
on.
Yes, it is. Oh, well, you've been on a different mic now. You tricked me. You went to another mic. But then, no, I should be able to see these things and work them all out. So how are you? Good?
Yeah, good. How are you?
Yes. Very good. Very good. Very good. All right. Now, our guest today is a Queensland Murray, but he's been living down in New South Wales for quite some time. Ken Kenning. Ken is a writer and a strong advocate for the rights of our mob. Published a book back in earlier this year, April this year, of a book of poetry. Quite outspoken on issues and stuff down in New South Wales. Ken, welcome to the program. How are you, man?
Thank you, Tiger. Yeah. And also, I'd like to give my acknowledgement to all elders, past and present, in all our lands. And just to let the viewers know, not one land has been ceded in this country. We are still a sovereign people.
You're not right.
As far as I'm concerned, I'm not answerable to anybody except my elders.
Yes. Pity some of them judges and magistrates don't take that on board when you try and tell them that, eh?
I tried to tell them years ago. They weren't listening.
They're still blocked up. Still not listening.
Yeah.
Tell us your mob, your country.
Well, yes, I'm from the Kunja clan of the Bidjara people. My family come from right out southwest Queensland, all the village, Charleville way.
All right.
All around that area, yeah.
Where'd you grow up? Where'd you do your schooling and stuff?
Well, I was mainly southeast Queensland. I didn't grow up in my traditional land. I lived in Redcliffe, Bribie Island, then Brisbane. Yeah.
All right.
Living in Wilson and Windsor over in Brisbane a long while.
Yeah. You did some time. You've come a long way from that slot in Bogger Road.
Oh, yeah. I was two division for a while.
Yeah.
Good old third division. And
how did you come into contact with the justice system as an adult or as a young fella? Did it start off as a young fella in juvie and then progressed on to the big house or what?
I got pinched a couple of times when I was a young fella, you know, and you go through the progression into the system of Bogger Road. It's like going through the school system, isn't it? You know, you go through primary school and then you go to high school.
Yeah.
And you're doing a big whack, you're doing postgraduate work, yeah.
Well, you utilised some of that time inside, if I recall correctly. You utilised some of that time for your education.
Yeah, I thought, I didn't have a lot of literacy skills, there was no education officer then. In those days, Murrays couldn't go and see the education officer. We actually threw a big campaign on until they allowed Murrays to be education officer.
What time was this? Was this around the 70s?
Yeah, that was in the 70s. And so, they were allowed to go. Our mob were then allowed to go. But, until then, we were sort of doing stuff at the yard. Folks who could, read a bit better could read to the others. We had stuff getting smuggled in that was political, and I started writing from inside myself, and started writing stuff while I was doing a lag, and so just I think to get my head outside the jar,
When you say
smuggling in things that were political. What sort of books were you reading, or what sort of books were smuggled in at the time?
Stuff being smuggled in by Malcolm X.
Malcolm X is the main one.
Of course. Who else would it be?
When you read Malcolm X, what was your feeling?
I'm Malcolm X. I mean, straight away, I identified. And the funny thing was, years later, when I went to university, that was the first book I read.
Wow.
The autobiography of Malcolm X. I read it before.
Yeah.
I'd read it after I got out of jail, and then I read it when I went to uni, and I read that. I read Revolutionary Suicide by Huey P. Newton.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the Black Panther Party, yeah.
Yeah, and I read The Black Resistance about Australia. The resistance, the differences of the resistance around the country, around from state to state.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't very much else I read, because I just thought all the rest was rubbish.
Mm. Yeah,
it's funny because Malcolm X became politicised when he went to prison as well, isn't it? And you hear about it a lot.
Mm. I think sometimes you can sit down, and you can say, all right, the system's got me beaten, or you can beat the system. And the way to beat the system is to sort of get your mind going a little bit more active, and sort of start thinking deep down who you are. There's a lot of time sitting in the cell. You can plot revenge if you want, which I did often, but or you can straighten that out and say, well, what directional sense do you want to go? And start looking at. I remember looking at things about what was going on within the jail system, and then years later looking at stuff that Foucault had written, and I thought, well, we had all this worked out, and we were uneducated black fellows, and we had it all worked out, and this bloke was a French theorist, and he wasn't so much different to what we were saying about the structures of jail and, those of us who were interested in the path of jail, what were the social phenomena that caused us to go there?
Mm.
Wasn't much different to what Foucault had said, except the language, There were a lot of S and C's in there. He didn't. That was one of the big differences.
Yes. You got the lived experience, and he was more... what?
Well, he never interviewed. He never went inside of a jail for Co. He interviewed blokes coming out of jail, I could imagine he paid him a price. So sometimes his stuff might have been all right on the money, or it might have been they might have been telling him what he wanted to hear. We'll never know that.
When you talk about jails in the '70s, particularly up in Queensland, what was it like being on the inside?
Well, look at it on the outside. Have a look at Bjarke Peterson, What was he doing to black fellows on the outside?
Yeah.
So you see, the whole system was corrupt in the sense that, there was that much racism, that much anti-black, three or more black fellows gathered on the street constituted an illegal march, Murray's were copping it left, right and centre under Bjarke Peterson. So imagine on the inside.
Mm.
Yeah, you get any oppressive regime, and all the madmen come out of the work and join the systems that are there to oppress people. So you didn't get any enlightened people, really enlightened people working in uniforms in those days. They weren't the most enlightened human beings, because they're an extension. They were picked out of the society that was around in the day, and that society was dictated by the Jacob Peterson's government policies.
Yeah.
The people coming in were heavily influenced by them, and they just thought black people were just treated like rubbish.
You still have some contact with people inside, I imagine, because you're a strong advocate for...
I'm doing some work now with people coming out, and I only do casual work at a place called Rainbow Lodge. It's like a halfway house for people coming out of jail down here in Sydney.
Mm.
And I'm off for the days with a bad back, but I don't mind doing that. And, I've also been involved in a writing program in Junee Prison with the Black Wallabies group down here, South Coast Writers Group. So doing stuff, and I keep in contact with some of the old mates I was locked up with. But you forge I suppose those of us who survive just forge a thing that can't be sort of broken.
With your discussions, I suppose the experiences of those people now that you're talking to, they're on their way out, they're coming out of jail, their experiences now and your experience and others of others of our mob like yourself that went through that system back in the 70s, any differences, any improvements? What are you hearing? What are you seeing?
Well, it's vastly different. There's a lot of programs now. Before, you got let out and you're given a weak, dull chit. And you're at the gate and you're on your own, you know.
That's no it. One to meet you, nowhere to go.
You know, if your family's informed, mum's down the hill waiting for me and nobody else much, but no programs, you know, parole officers tell you what to do.
Mm.
And that's about it. There was no programs and, maybe some of us need them, some of us didn't, you know.
There was severe human rights abuses when you were in Queensland jails, weren't you? People used to be locked up in cages and put in solitary confinement, black holes, everything.
The black hole.
I did time in both of those. So.
Yeah.
You didn't have any programs. But somehow, I don't know, I look now, I think that the changing face of prisons has been drugs in jails, you know. And I contend, and I'll always contend this, that the drugs were purposely introduced into jails. I went on the 730 report in the 1980s and said this quite clearly, that in my opinion, drugs were allowed to come into jails to sedate the population.
Mm-hmm.
You look at all through the 70s, we had escapes, we had riots, and this was all over the country, we had everything going on.
When there was a time before drugs were inside, you're saying?
Yeah, before drugs were inside, we had people fighting for their rights. I remember jacking up about the food. I remember jacking up about the conditions.
Right.
I remember going on strike, refusing to come out of their cells until they put proper conditions into the prison system.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden towards the late 70s and then going into the 80s, people were whacked out in gear and they didn't care anymore. You know, you only got to look at historically how much action's happened before. And I know down here in New South Wales, the then Minister Yatley admitted the prisons were full of drugs, and they were. But you can't get that much drugs in jail unless they've got cooperation.
Of course.
I mean, yes. You flood a jail full of drugs. I know the ways they used to smuggle them in, and I'll tell you what, you couldn't get that much in like that in a big pit. So there was only one mechanism it was used for, that was to take control of the prison population.
Yeah, right.
So you got blokes going in without a habit, coming out with a habit.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think as we've seen the generations, you know, we have generational cycles of our mob being incarcerated. I think we see a complete difference in the generations who are going into jail now compared to your generation who might have been more able to fight for their rights and everything, whereas now we're seeing just a complete breakdown, I guess, because of that cycle.
You bring drugs into the equation and it's unfortunate they were introduced into communities, into prison systems. People became reliant on their crimes were dictated by the need for drugs. Our crimes were dictated by a different thing, you know. Maybe it was educational, maybe it was politically motivated, maybe there's a whole lot of different things. So you look at the programs coming out, we had no programs, but I think the programs now are failing because what people fail to take into consideration is the mindset of a bloke coming out of jail for, well, depends how long you've done, but the mindset is there, and I think the rehabilitationists don't realise what mindset people have, and they're going into a program when they come out, even the halfway house I'm working in now, that's so they can get out on parole. You'll say, righto, I'll sign up for this. And then the next thing they've got to go through these programs, they sort of resent it to a degree because you're still part of the system that's keeping them there. Now, a bloke would prefer to come out of jail and do what he wants, you know? Now they've got, I don't know whether these programs are a good or a bad thing because some of them just don't work. And they're seen as
is it tick a box?
A condition of freedom. You've got conditional freedom. We'll give you freedom as long as you do this.
Mm.
I mean, I look at one of the things that people doing is anger management course. I used to take fellows to anger management courses. And they were angrier when they come out than when they went in.
Yeah, of course. I guess
I had to have a Yarndor bloke who was doing running anger management courses. I think you've got a personality defect.
He was making him more wild.
I said, I've got to calm these fellas down. They want to go and fight somebody. I said, when I brought them here, they were all right. I'm going, well, you know, we're having a good time. I came and spent half an hour here and they're off their heads, you know. So, what are you doing? I said, you belt them around or something. There's something going on.
Now, you're talking about a time also before Aboriginal legal services were in place.
Yeah. That's, you know, people were incarcerated and then they, legal services happened. And, yeah, I think, yeah, that was one of the great things that happened. It sort of, there were some things that were stopped because of the legal services in the 70s. Some of the way it means they were getting, some of the, they used to get old gummies and get them to falsely sign confessions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the legal service was instrumental in putting that to a stop. So,
have we gone full circle there just because Aboriginal legal services are so underfunded? Most people are told
to
plead guilty.
Well, that's what the government's trying to do.
Yeah.
Seriously, the government is trying to put us back to the days. And I've always stated in more modern times that they're trying to put us back on mission. This has been the agenda of the Liberal National Party. You look at the removal of communities, the Northern Territory intervention, the defunding, $500 million goes straight out now. When all the other fund cuts had to be dealt with, they had to go through both House of Parliament federally, and there was always a debate and argument. Some snuck through with amendment, some didn't get through, but the $500 million of Aboriginal affairs went through with the blink of an eye.
Yeah, yeah, without an argument.
Said
yeah.
A word about it, not one word.
Yeah.
And it took Bill Shorten 1 month to make a statement about it. And that was a written statement, and then he walked off the camera without any question. Now,
well, like you say, they were trying to get us back on missions. Look at the control of the basics card and this, what's his new one called?
Healthy welfare card.
Healthy welfare card.
Yeah.
Now, there's two terms, two words back to back, the healthy welfare. They don't sit right together, do they?
There's these words. I went to uni and I still can't get hold of some of the words they use anyway. But,
it's total doublespeak.
It's like, what they call it, oxymoron or something.
That's it.
That's true.
Oxymoronic.
Oxymoronic.
It's a moronic waste of oxygen.
You're not wrong. Yes, too many OTs around, oxygen thieves, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what they are. So if you look at all these things, it's an attack. And it's more than an attack. I call it, when I'm in rallies down here, I say, you know, they've redeclared the war they declared in 1788 has been ongoing.
Mm.
But now they're declaring war and they're committing genocide by government policy. Mm. We've got to get the rhetoric right. This isn't bad government. This is murder of our people.
Mm.
You know, the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which Australia had to be dragged, screaming, kicking to sign, quite clearly states if you remove people from their lands, they will die.
Yeah, that's true.
So they know that. They know that, yet they're going ahead with this. I mean, Malcolm Turnbull comes in and everybody says, oh, he's going to be the Messiah. He's far from the Messiah. Malcolm Turnbull is Tony Abbott with a better dental care.
Yes.
That's all he is.
Yes.
And, you look at the only statement he's made on Aboriginal people since he's been in office is he wants to open dialogue with the Indigenous Advisory Council, which he knows because I put a petition on his wall over a year ago that Aboriginal people were against their selection.
Mm.
And he wants to open dialogue. I mean, this is people with Twiggy Forrest on the board, the CEO of Rio Tinto, and our people who are on the board are a little bit tough. I mean, Warren Mundine's catch cars, send your kids to school, send your kids to school.
Get a job. Get a better education, go and get a job.
It's all about economic development.
Yeah.
But I reckon if they were actually serious, they would actually start addressing what we're talking about, which is the incarceration crisis, because it hurts many people. Just stop putting so many blackfellas in jail, you know what I mean?
Mm. Mm.
They're playing the government game, and that's why he wants to open dialogue with them. He doesn't want to open dialogue with people who are out protesting. He wants to open up dialogue with somebody who'll just parrot, send your kids
sit there and say, yes, minister, yes, boss.
Yeah. So some lady's mourning the death of an infant and he wants to tell her to send the rest of the kids to school, or your whole community's up for a removal and the school's going to be bulldozed down. Now, there's a contradiction in terms.
Mm.
And these are the people Malcolm want to listen to. You had young Josephine Cashman. I thought in 2014 she addressed people in a posher suburb here in Sydney, and her opening address was Aboriginal people have to put the past behind them and move towards the future. And that's exactly what the government wants to hear.
Well, that's the parroting of Redneck Australia too.
These are our own people saying this on the Indigenous Advisory Council, and there's a big article about this, so it's not something I'm making up.
Well, I tend to think that the government's not even listening to the Advisory Council. I don't even think listen to Mundine. Well, I think Mundine comes out afterwards and parrots what they say.
In the long run, Abbott dropped him. He wouldn't talk to him.
He
just stopped talking to him because they're an embarrassment. So what's Turnbull do? He says he's going to reinvigorate dialogue with the Indigenous Advisory Council, knowing full well that a lot of black fellows are against it.
Don't support it at all.
Well, it's about the absence of democratic elected structures. You know, if these people were elected, it'd be a very different thing. Mm. It's just the whole concept, isn't it? Yeah.
It's like when they wanted to talk about getting recognition back on the rails, they got 40 people, selected people over at Kirribilli House Abbott to talk to them. That not one person in the room did it that was anti-recognition, except when Nolly couldn't get his own way, he had an outburst. So that's only because he couldn't get his own way. We had our own spies in there. We were all right. journalists.
I want to take a break for a song. When I come back, I want to talk to you about how could things be different. Say you were in Turnbull. Say you were in Turnbull's shoes. What would you do?
Oh, I've got a good answer to that, brother. Yeah.
I knew you would have. Yeah. Just stay with us.
Right.
We'll come back after this song by Yotha Yindi. It's called Stop That. Welcome back to Let's Talk. That's Yotha Yindi with Stop That. And there's a lot of things we'd like to stop. My guest is Ken Canning, a man that's been through the hellhole of Boggo Road Jail and been through the education system when he got out and has achieved quite a bit. He's a writer, just launched earlier this year, published a book of poems. And, a man of with a lot of views on a lot of different things. So, Ken, tell us, jails today, what's costing $200,000 to $250,000 a year to keep someone inside. It's big bucks, big money. But the problem is, one of the biggest problems is, the rehabilitation isn't taking place. It's not an environment for rehabilitation. But in saying that, in acknowledging that, what would you do if you were, say, in Malcolm Turnbull's shoes or somebody in a position of power? How could things be changed where we'd get better outcomes for the same money or even less money than what they're putting in?
We could virtually, in 5 years, we could halve the money put into Aboriginal affairs in 10 years. Now, put simply, everything state and federal governments have tried since 1788 has failed, and failed miserably. There are double standards in play. Whether we agree with ATSIC or we don't agree with ATSIC is not the point. It was how it was dismantled was the point. It was an elected body. Howard picked a half a dozen people who were corrupt who would have been voted out anyway and went on a media campaign with his stooges in the media to dismantle ATSIC because of alleged corruption. That was an elected body. If you use the same rule of thumb with every state and federal government, none of them would have succeeded since Federation.
That's true.
None of them. They would have all. Why didn't we sack the New South Wales Parliament recently when half of them appeared before ICAC?
Yeah, there's corruption. A difference in the way people view black and white representative structures. Blackfellas are always dealt more harshly.
So we have a black representative body, and some blackfellas loved it, some didn't. That's not my point. The point is it was sacked because of presumed corruption. Why don't we sack the present federal government?
Yeah.
Because there's been ministers caught fiddling the till.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we sack them now? See, you can't have these two rules applied.
Mm-hmm.
The only way we're going to get around it, and the only way is that places like Finland, they worked up to having their own parliament. And we have to, and I would say that the way to start that, it won't happen in my lifetime. We've got to start somewhere. I mean, I'm 63. I can't see it happen before I'm 65.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to start getting elections in every community around the country to elect representatives in every community. Not online. Got to have polling booths. So every Aboriginal person, I'd say over the age of 16, because we're going to grow up a lot quicker, over the age of 16, has the ability to vote. I think some of our voting systems before, a lot of people have been left out. We have to come up with a mechanism. Now, if I was turned below, I would say this is the way to go. We've got to get self-empowerment to Aboriginal people. Once we vote this large body in, that we elect out of that body the bureaucracy for Aboriginal affairs as the stepping stone. So then we get those people into the bureaucracy. We elect the council of elders to oversee these people and say, you're not in there to, for your own glory. You're in there to do something for your people. The council of elders to continually oversee people. Now, you take over the bureaucracy and then you say to the sitting parliament, look, you wanted Peter Garrett in parliament, so you made a seat for him. Make a seat for one of us to be Minister for Aboriginal Affairs. Once we start taking over at that level and we start getting some points on the board, which we will, we can't do any worse than the governments have done. Once we self-empower ourselves.
Yeah.
Well, we can't. They go backwards. They're regressing.
That's
so
right.
It wouldn't be too hard to get some points on the board. Then you could have a case to say we need to break away. We need to be now a self-governing body. Because no matter what you do, I mean, even in the media, and it's hard to say anywhere, we have to rely on government funding. Now, what we've got to force the government into doing is saying, right, 1% of all corporations getting profit out of this country, 1% of that profit goes to us. That runs our government. So we don't have our hand out for government funding. We have our own autonomous vote. And that's fair money. That's fair money.
That'll
be 1% bugger all.
That's right.
And they're making the profit out of the slaughter of our people. They can pay some bloody compensation for a change. And that compensation, now here in the cities, we can't get our lands back, but we could have programs up which were culturally appropriate to our peoples in the cities. We could be running things from all over the country. And I'll tell you what people would have to learn is after 227 years of occupation, we will make mistakes. Let us make those mistakes and let us work through those mistakes. But let us do it on our own.
If we had the privilege of making our own mistakes, we'd be in a far better position. But we don't have that right. We don't have the privilege of making our own mistakes. Yet we sit and watch mistake after mistake after mistake, year after year after year, government after government after government. That's a big point you make there. If we were allowed to make our own mistakes.
We haven't. I've never been a Minister for Aboriginal Affairs. That's not my goal. I'm more out in the streets yelling at them, you know. But, you need somebody a bit suaver than that. But, whoever's in the position, if they say one thing wrong, they'd have every man and his dog jumping down the throat, particularly the media. You look at a black spokesperson who gets up and says something, the media's all over it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, Chuck Mundine, when he got up, a lot of people, when 9/11 happened, a lot of people were saying America bought that on themselves.
Of course.
A lot of people were saying.
Of course.
And that was the sentiment of the people. He said on television he had the media all over him. Over him like the measles.
Yes, yes.
And he said something that anybody was saying. I mean,
he said the truth. That was the problem.
The pigeons come home to roost, right?
And so if anybody else says, I heard commentators in later years say the same thing. A documentary was made. Michael Moore made a documentary, some other bloke made a documentary, and everybody thinks, that's legitimate. Chuck Mundine says it, and they're all over him like a rash.
Yeah, yeah.
See, this is the insidious business of being black.
Yeah.
You can't say things, even if they are true, you get people jumping all over you. So if you imagine what happens when you make a mistake.
Yeah,
exactly.
But ATSIC, you're talking about ATSIC. ATSIC got a completely bad rap because they were delivering a couple of really good programs.
Well,
for example,
CHIP.
That's right, the CHIP program.
They had an electoral program. They had they were delivering CDP for a while. And these are some of the best programs ever delivered in Aboriginal affairs. So they get this complete bad rap.
Anti-grog things happening that were working,
Treaty campaigns,
Yep, but this is why now. You look at the recognition campaign now, you have a look at this, all the money's going to the recognitionists, you know. None of it's going to people who oppose it. I happen to oppose it. And I'll respect anybody who's had their point of view, but for goodness sakes, this distribute the funds so we can all have a say.
Yeah.
I'm very suspicious of any movement where the funds are all in one side. I love me footy. I switch on the footy. I got the big R all over the football field.
Yeah.
I got Ray Warren saying, don't forget constitutional recognition.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear that, you know.
Yep.
And this is aimed at white folk trying to get them to think they're being warm and fuzzy. There is a different point of view, and it's not being allowed out there.
Mm.
And the group was put it to emissaries to Abbott to have some funding. He answered it on national television. We will not be having debates around the countryside on this issue because the Constitution belongs to all Australians. Well, he's even wrong there.
Mm.
Because what this constitutional debate about affects 2.5% of us people in this country, not all the people in Australia. The people affected are us. And I maintain the only people who should be voting in this should be us. And, he's way off mark there. This is the bloke who said nobody lived here before the British came here, by the way. So I wouldn't be expecting too much from him. But if you scratch the surface of constitutional recognition, you have a look at all the government funding's going to them, and also they get private funding, Rio Tinto, mining companies.
Yeah.
Transfield.
Yeah.
Transfield services, the Nauru torturers. If I was constitutional recognition, I'd drop them like a hot spud.
Exactly.
That's the biggest argument not to go for it.
You know? I definitely
right.
agree.
And you're right.
Recognise just released a media release yesterday or the day before, actually, claiming that Aboriginal support has gone up from 79% to 85%. How would you respond to that claim from Recognise?
I'd say that's rubbish. I'd say they're playing games.
What have they got to base that on? Yeah, Luke Pearson certainly proved that wrong. But what do they base that on? I mean, have they got a new survey done?
They claim it's a new survey, but
they haven't got any. They haven't got any background statistics. They haven't said where they did their survey.
Exactly.
Luke put his online.
Old figures being rehashed, eh? Old figures being rehashed.
He said, and he's had over 80% were against Aboriginal people. Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people were against it. Now, his was open online, you know, so, I mean, any man who's dog could come along and have a look at his work. But is the government publishing where they got their material from? No,
that's
they're
right.
not.
Well, Luke's stuff is quite transparent, eh? There's a real transparency there with Luke's survey and stuff.
Yeah, he was
quite the opposite. Yes, but quite the opposite to the way Recognise do their business.
Well, you know, I just think it's insidious that the whole debate is kept secretive and... Yeah, to me, it's a distraction. Look, why are we even morally, legally, there's a legal argument that we'll lose sovereign rights to that. That's why I reckon all these big companies are investing in it. Let's face facts now. You and I can't ring up politicians. We haven't got their mobile number. Big companies do. And nobody can tell me they don't have their little conversation. Now, why are these big companies investing in recognition? They know something we don't know. And I reckon they know sovereignty will be extinguished and they can go absolutely berserk on the land in this country without any opposition. That's what they know. That's why they're investing. They're business people. Now, that's one legal side. A moral argument is why we're even having this debate at this point of our history when we have an invasion in the Northern Territory, where we have, since that invasion in the Northern Territory, we have a 500% increase in the suicide rate of Aboriginal people. Since the false apology by Kevin Rudd, a 400% increase of kids being stolen, we have removals of communities in Western Australia causing death. In Western Australia, you're 54 times more likely to be arrested if you're black or if you're white.
Mm.
We've got jails overflowing. In WA now, they're building jails specifically for black fellas. It's all, and removals, by the way, is all over the country.
Yeah.
Communities have been removed everywhere. So why are we even having this debate?
Exactly.
It's putting the horse before the cart. And you've still got in there 51 of the Constitution states the federal government can make decisions for the betterment of Aboriginal people. Who's to say that? That sounds like the protection board to me.
Well, even when the expert panel delivered their recommendations, they wanted to replace it with the word advancement. And advancement has so many negative connotations. So you just wonder any new consultations, what they'll come up with.
Who decides the betterment? Ken Canning has been diagnosed with a mental health problem. He gets out in the street and starts spruiking off to those. So the government says, for the betterment of Ken, who's an Aboriginal person, will put him in a lunatic asylum for the rest of his life. Yeah. That's for his betterment.
Mm.
Yeah, this kid, that's for his advancement. This will make him better. You know, that's ridiculous. You know? So
yes, yes.
I just think, you know, it doesn't amount to much while you've got that clause in there. You can put whatever you like in the Constitution, but while you've got a government that can make decisions for your betterment, that's ridiculous. What's for our betterment? I know what they're thinking. Our betterment is to put us back on missions.
Yeah.
Because they're starting to get that way. Look at all the media rhetoric. All of a sudden, in this last decade, we've all become dysfunctional. And they had the romantic view before that we're all so cultural and we're all so spiritual. Now we're all dysfunctional.
Mm.
Look how the shift has been. And 20 years ago, Tiger, you saw it. People used to talk about the beauty of Aboriginal culture. The media was all over it, you know. Mm. Sometimes it was overdone, you know, but now we're all dysfunctional.
Yeah.
Look where that's heading. So you can see where it's heading. We're no longer a race of people to be admired for our longevity in our culture. We're a dysfunctional race of people that should be hidden away. That's what's happening.
You use the term betterment. You can look at betterment and education. The education system is purely an assimilationist tool.
Well, that's what I reckon. I worked in education for years, and I'm not convinced it does anything. I went for political reasons, and political reasons only. I worked in there hoping I could get some politicisation happening, but all that happened to me was all around me more and more assimilationist policy. Until eventually I got thrown out, you know, of a job of a centre that I was a co-founder of.
Mm-hmm.
I got chucked out by an assimilationist.
Mm.
So that says a lot about education. If you're in there with the right ideals, you're no good to the system. So,
well, I think they equate, when you're talking about betterment, betterment means being white, I think, which is exactly what you're talking about with assimilation. Yeah. Everything, sort of the thing you aspire to is to be like white Australia, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, who classifies betterment? I mean, we don't classify that, do we?
That's right.
If I was to classify betterment, I would say self-determination by having our own governing body separated from the Commonwealth of Australia.
Mm.
That's what I'd call betterment.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
they're not going to classify that as betterment.
Yep. Yeah. No, when we look at that education system, it's not that long ago. It's still in the living memory of our old people, Ken, where they weren't allowed inside the gate of any school.
I know. This is what I'm saying. This came under the Protection Board. This thing, the betterment for Aboriginal people, is the same language as the Protection Board.
Yeah.
And while ever that's in there, it doesn't matter what they put in the Constitution about recognition. And the other point here, you seriously got to have a look at this. The constitutional recognition was first talked about in 1928. Why is it such a big deal now?
Mm-hmm.
I've got the answer to that. Look at the last decade. There's been more people getting up saying, we are a sovereign nation. People sign whole declarations with a lot of signatories on it saying we are a sovereign people. We don't recognise the Commonwealth of Australia. People are trying to cede their countries from the Commonwealth of Australia. People are saying we never ceded the land. And every political speech you get in the streets now, including mine, we always say we never ceded the land. We are a sovereign people.
Mm.
As we've upped the ante with our own sovereignty, and reminding the government we have never ceded this land, they've upped the ante with this recognition thing.
Mm-hmm.
They've really gone to town to con the white people that they're doing the right thing. They don't want the white people to listen to our sovereignty rights. They want them to listen to how good they are about putting us in a constitution that had nothing to do with us in the first place.
Yeah. And when you look
at... any black fellow that had anything to do with writing the constitution, nobody.
Yeah,
this whole thing, it's a white thing, Ken. I've said for a long, long time, it's a white thing. This constitutional recognition is a white thing. It didn't come from the grassroots. It didn't come from Aboriginal people. It's a white thing. It's come from whites. It's to appease the white guilt and white conscience of in this country.
Well, that's why it's stuck around symbolic recognition as well.
Mm.
They don't even want to look at... We're talking about sort of race powers and everything like that. They're not even looking at that at the moment. So.
No, you can look
at the different states that have got their constitution where they've recognised First Nations people
In the state constitution, and then what's
yeah, about? But in the it's not in the preamble. It's preambular recognition has happened, I think, in South Australia, Victoria, Queensland, New South Wales. What changes? What's the betterment? What's your betterment?
I haven't seen New South Wales. Here.
Exactly. So why?
I haven't seen nothing here. And look at South Australia; they're still trying to hunt people off their land.
Yeah.
So you know why? Why would they? Why aren't we learning from that?
Exactly. Why aren't we learning from that? I think that's one of the biggest tools we've got, or biggest things we can say. Look, you've tried it in other states at a state level. It's done nothing. Why are you going to waste millions of dollars? Yeah, yeah.
Now, here's where people have got to think seriously about it. You said be put myself in Turnbull's shoes, right?
Yep.
Murray's have got to put themselves in the colonial shoes.
Yeah.
You've taken over land 227 years ago. You own it lock, stock and barrel. Are you going to put something in the constitution that'll give anything back? No. You're not going to do it.
That will undermine your authority and stuff. Yes, no, you wouldn't. That's right.
And we also know that corporate Australia is running our politicians.
Yes, sure.
Are they going to do anything that'll give us our rights to our land back? No, a big no. So, you know, whatever that. And again, you look at, they're talking about changing other parts of the constitution. They've actually come up with some wording. But since the last decade that it's been a catch cry, they haven't even come up with a wording. You know, all we've got is constitutional recognition is they can't get past
that's
that.
That's right. That's right. Yes.
So, why are we even voting on something that doesn't exist? That the wording doesn't exist.
I mean, right.
I was at a, we did a debate with young Mark. He's a Murray fella, nice fella, and Nick Gooder, and I actually hit myself in the head at Redford Town Hall. I said, for goodness sake, I came here prepared for this. The general public doesn't know. But can one of you fellows explain to me what is constitutional recognition? To date, you haven't been clear. I don't know what you're talking about. Just say it out. Tell me now, what is constitutional recognition?
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't explain.
These are
people who are working for recognition.
Yeah.
No, but you ask them. You go up and ask them exactly what it means, and they'll give you more double talk than Tony Abbott, Malcolm Turnbull, and Bill Shorten put together.
I think this whole debate has been about recognised silencing dissent, because you see it all around the place. They don't want it, and even just putting out lies in their press releases about 80% support. I've never met a blackfellow who's not connected with recognised who supports constitutional reform or doesn't have serious reservations.
The both debates I've been involved in, I actually thought that I could have sat there and said nothing and they would have won the debate for me.
because they're just talking in circles, eh?
Because they just didn't know what they were talking about. That was a quote that came on Facebook. Somebody said, good job, but you really didn't need to say anything. That was a cheeky thing to say, but it was a true thing to say. The people driving this don't even know their own issues.
Yeah.
And they don't know what they're driving.
Yep.
And,
that's right.
Yes.
I think
when I asked them, tell me what it is, it just made it a little bit worse for them. I mean, we're at a critical time in our history with forced removals of this communities in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to talk about something in the bloody constitution. That's rubbish.
Yeah.
We're talking about people dying. I mean, even if by a stretch of the imagination that some communities are as dysfunctional as the government will have you believe, even if that were the absolute truth, removing that and putting that community into a larger community does not fix the problem.
That's right.
It makes it worse.
Yeah.
So that in its alone tells you why they're doing it. They're doing it so they can mine the whole of Western
Access
Australia.
To country. Access to country. You're right. Yes.
They're trying to wipe out people, and they don't care whether they die or not. And again, we got our politicians on the Security Council of the United Nations. That's a joke. That is a joke. On a Security Council of the United Nations to ensure the world is secure, yet people are dying in their own backyard.
Well, they're doing worse than that. They're trying to get on the Human Rights Council now.
That'd be a bigger joke. Yeah, yeah.
Well, this will be a joke because under the human rights have got Australia under watch for four things. It's treatment of Indigenous peoples, It's treatment of asylum seekers. It's treatment of people with disabilities. And it's lack of action on climate change. Four of the most, well, you look at the people involved, three of the most vulnerable people in the country, and they're hammering, and the United Nations have already tipped them about it. I mean, for goodness sakes, they're giving it to people with disabilities. They're on a watch list for their treatment of people with disabilities. This is a country that is intent on wiping out anybody. It's almost Hitler-like at the moment. It's becoming very fascist, this country. And, I don't mince words with that. This is what it's becoming. When you've got people who are different to the Anglo-Saxon well-off white male getting persecuted, they're the groups of people being persecuted and only persecuted, then you've got a serious issue. You've got an issue of fascism. Where does it stop? We'll have death camps soon. Just lock people with disabilities away, and if we don't like them, we'll euthanize them.
Well, we do lock them away. There's indefinite detention in WA and the NT, where a lot of blackfellas end up in indefinite detention. So that's not like a hyperbolic statement, because it's actually happening,
It is, and even in the 70s, there were people locked away that had intellectual disabilities, shouldn't have been there.
Do Crims have a vote inside?
Well, I think these days they do. We didn't then. Right. We weren't allowed to vote. We lost all rights to civil liberties in those days, but I'm pretty sure they...
I think that's been restored, those rights.
They tried to get rid of it, I think, and then there was a really good... I think it was a high court case with a Koori woman in New South Wales.
That's right, a Koori woman from down...
Yeah, that's right.
So we had no rights to vote before, so we had no rights for anything.
Yes.
We only had wrongs.
But do you have much faith in the voting process anyway?
No, I don't. I stopped voting, and it's a funny thing because I went to court many years ago when I stopped voting, and I won a battle down here in New South Wales that I didn't have to actually vote, and that was a bit of a lengthy process. But then all these years later, it comes back. I didn't vote recently. Once I was overseas, and I got these fines, and then I got this Koori lad to check out, and he said they went away, and he said, "Have you had some court case happen in the past?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, you're not getting fined because of that."
So, right.
I'm exempt from voting. That's from a court case in the early 80s. So
there you go.
That was a bit odd, yeah. So I was going through this period of time. In the early 80s, I was refusing to vote. I went to court. I went to court to try and cede my person from the Commonwealth of Australia. That failed. And then I went to court to try and resign my Australian citizenship. That failed. But anyway, we had a little go.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I think Murrumu up in Cairns is trying to do similar things.
Yeah.
Yudinji country up there.
Yeah, people, see, this is what I'm saying, that the recognition debate has come in hand with people taking action on their sovereign right. And you look at it, it mirrors it. Yeah, the last decade we've been really getting into our sovereign right, and we've been very vocal about it.
So you're saying that they've come up with this constitutional recognition scam to try and counter this move by our mob that's growing and getting stronger.
Well, they're distracting the white public from what we're saying on the other side, because any intellectual white person, any intelligent white person will have a look that we've actually got a case. We never ceded our land. Warfare did take place in this country, and this war has never ceased.
That's right. It still goes on.
They have never, ever, ever done anything to stop the warfare. So technically we're still at war.
Yeah.
There's no tribal nation in this country that ever ceded its land. So people will have a look at this. So that they've come across with this massive campaign on recognition to make out that they're good white people who want to do the right thing. They want to distract people, too, from the things that... the horrendous human rights abuses against their people on a daily basis, and our political views that are getting stronger and stronger.
Yeah.
And that's all recognition is. It's nothing more and nothing less. It's
smoke and mirrors, another scam.
Look at the apology. What happened after the apology? People thought it was great. And what's it turned into?
That's right.
A farce where now our children are being stolen at a greater rate than any other time in history.
Yeah. Yes, you're right.
Now, that's a sad indictment. Where does that leave that apology? I mean, Kevin Rudd had a window of opportunity. When you put up policy to fight the forced issues that we have to deal with, one of the backlashes, white people say, don't give them this, don't give them that. On that day, there were white people around the country crying.
Mm.
He had a window of opportunity to put legislation through and work with Aboriginal people. He had that window of opportunity. He didn't just miss it. He purposely missed it.
Oh, of course. No, it could have been a much more meaningful thing that happened.
No, he just used it to further his own ambition.
Yeah. He played the role. He was a blonde-headed Smurf, and he did the blonde-headed Smurf act. Yeah. And just got out there and did a cheesy photo op and walked off. That's what they do.
Yeah.
I've got no time
for any of that. I think sometimes, you know, we've got some of the Greens in New South Wales are coming on side with us.
Mm-hmm.
But then their federal counterparts are still pro-recognition, but definitely in the state Greens, they're not pro-recognition. They're very much against it. But there is some hope that we've got some little smidgens of politicians around, but not enough.
This is why
we need to be self-governing. We don't need this rubbish anymore.
No, self-government certainly is. And that's what Pearson's been saying in his document, that empowered communities is a lot of the stuff you've spoken about is actually empowered communities document, you know, or his proposal, his plan. There's a few good things in that. There's a few things.
But I see in some of his writings where he's a little bit central to that. You know? I'm more interested in there's no leaders.
Mm. That goes back to our own way. Listen, we're out of time. News is fast approaching. Certainly appreciate your talking with you for the hour. You're giving us your time.
Can I send down a cheerio?
Yes.
Writing. Is that all right?
You certainly can. No worries at all.
Oh, my dear old mate Arthur Bell.
He's a mate of all of ours. He listens to this radio station more than anybody I know. Yep.
When I started writing, I just got to say this from jail. Arthur put music to some of the words, and he even conned people that Bob Dylan wrote this song.
Brother.